Hello, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Morningstar Men's Ministry podcast. We are in our fifth in a six-part series entitled Six Things Every Man Should Know. And this morning we're going to look at the topic of friendship. More broadly speaking, not only friendship, but those, what I'll call close affiliations that you have. Any organizations that you are a member of, and specifically we'll be thinking for a little bit about the value of a church community and how a good church community can build into people some very important things. As a matter of fact, as you'll hear in the opening of today's presentation, I believe that the friendships that men choose are one of the most influential factors in whether or not they are successful in their chosen pursuits. Friendships can do both incredible things to propel us forward and also to ground us, but they can also, if they're poorly chosen, well, they can take us to bad places, or they can sidetrack or side rail us from any meaningful success in life. And yet, in spite of that reality, there are so few of us that choose our friends with a degree of intentionality and choose our friends given the qualities that we're looking for in traveling companions for life if we're traveling toward success. So I hope you'll benefit from this. I hope you'll be blessed by it. More than that, guys, I really hope that this perhaps more than many others, is a recording that you'll pause up from time to time as you're listening. Just stop and reflect on what's just been said and consider its implications in your own life. Is there something you need to do differently this coming week as a result of what you hear? Is there somebody you need to call? Is there maybe a friendship that you've thought of as a friendship, but maybe, I'm not saying you cut it off, but maybe you need to put a little bit more distance between you and that person because you know deep down inside that maybe that person is not taking you to the desired destination that you're striving for. So guys, hope we'll see you again next week. Hope you're blessed. And as always, God's blessing, rich blessing on your life. Okay, guys, good morning. It actually would have been okay if Bob wouldn't have made a correct introduction as to our topic for the morning. So it would probably appear, if you've been here for most of the weeks leading up to this fifth week in our series, that success is kind of a key theme, and it actually is. So just think about all of the principles that you've already heard about what it means to be successful in life. What are the things you need to do? What are the things that you need to become? And I'm not talking about what you've heard here. I'm talking about just in general. What are some of those things? Now, you can include something that you've heard here. It's okay. But many of you are at least in your 40s, and I think I'm being kind. Some of you perhaps have crossed that threshold a little while ago. What have you heard? What are the principles that lead to a life well lived, to a successful life? Just call some out.
Seeking wisdom.
Okay, that was mine. Come on, don't be a suck up. Bob. Or, sorry.
Strong work ethic.
Right, work hard. Strong work ethic. Anybody else?
Family values.
Family values. What does that mean?
A wholesome family that sticks together, prays together, eats together.
Okay. Okay. So time spent with family and commitment to family. All right. Anything else? Well, apparently most of you haven't been exposed to much success literature, or it hasn't made much of an impact on you. Good one. Perseverance.
Education.
Ooh, now there's a big one, right? Haven't we all heard that? Get a good education because then you'll be able to get a good job, right?
Knowing first aid.
Perhaps, depending on what side of the tracks you grew up on, it might be useful.
Did I say that out loud?
You probably did. Okay, so we've got to, honestly, I was surprised. I thought I'd get a little bit more diversity of answer. I'm not surprised that I didn't hear this. And yet I believe that what we're going to talk about this morning is one of the most foundational principles for success that you'll see. As a matter of fact, when we talked in week one about the fact that the scriptures don't talk a great deal about success because they take it for granted, but in fact they do talk a great deal about wisdom, which can lead to success. In the midst of all of the wisdom that is communicated through Scripture, this key principle is talked about directly and indirectly a lot. Your friends and your close associations will have a profound impact on if you are successful, how you are successful, and why you are successful. In other words, if you were to float to the top of a list of 100 things that contribute to the success of a human being, I believe in the top 5 would be the people that you choose to befriend in your life and the close associations that you have. So, why would that be true?
Rise or sink to the level of your confidence.
Okay. Anybody else before I expand on that one a little bit? That was good, Brian. You'll spend more time with them. There's a school of thought that suggests something like this, that every human being becomes the average of the 5 people that they're closest to in terms of their understanding, in terms of their awareness, in terms of their interest, in terms of even their overall success. That you and I become somewhere in the middle of the group of friends, the group of peers that we associate with. So just think about that. And some weeks, I give you a real information dump. As a matter of fact, some weeks, I simply run out of time because there's too much to talk about. We all know I love to talk. This week isn't one of those weeks. I want you to really think about this. Who are your close friends? What are your close affiliations? And do you think that remaining in those particular affiliations, and an affiliation is like this church setting, are they going to contribute to taking you in the direction of the success that you desire? So we'll look at, and I've got a list here. What are some of the affiliations? So family, well, you don't get to pick family. But once you're an adult, you do get to decide how much your family will influence you. So here's a question. Is your family good for you? Do you associate with your family because they are good for you and you are good for them? Or do you associate with family simply because it's what everybody else does and their blood? Or you can't leave town and leave them behind because they seem to follow you wherever you go. And then your friendships. Make a note about this. Men rarely make intentional friendships. Instead, they make proximity friendships. You know what that means?
It's a matter of happenstance.
It's a matter of happenstance. So, 2 guys show up at work at the same place. They work next to each other throughout the day. So they become friends. And that, if friendship defines our success, wouldn't it be unfortunate if the guy who walked in and started work the same day that you did wasn't good for you, but you never looked outside that? Bob. In your own way, however you choose to reword that, write down what Bob said. Most men will gravitate to somebody that's near them, or if not somebody that's near them, what is the way that you have made friends throughout your life? What defines for you what it will mean to have a friend? Okay, proximity is one thing. I think there's something else. Shared interest. So proximity, who you're near, and shared interest, those two factors combined are going to determine the friends that most men have. Let me ask you a question. And this is a reflective question, and maybe you've never thought about it this way before. What are the odds that by random event, the man that you're next to all the time, who happens to share an interest with in fishing, for instance, is going to really be good for your future success? There's an excellent chance? Well, in fishing. If your goal in life is to be great at fishing, maybe that's true. But what if it's not? Let me really ask you to think about the difference that an affiliation makes in your life. So I'm looking at Jim there, and I'll single Jim out. I could just as easily single some of the rest of you out. So Jim, how long have you been here at this church?
3 years.
Okay. I'd like you to think back to the you that you were before you came here. What are the significant life changes? And I know I'm putting you on the spot, but what are some of the significant life changes that have taken place as a result of your affiliation here? A week from now, Jim and I are going to be on our way to an airport. Well, we'll probably be at an airport by then to leave to go to the Dominican for a short-term missions trip. Now, would that have happened if you weren't here? Just that single event by itself could have a powerful transformative effect on your life. But think about all of the small events leading up to that choice. Think about all the small events that have taken place in your life as a result of being in this community that led up to your choice even to go on the trip. And down that trip and the difference that that will possibly make in your life. And the change in trajectory that that will make in your life. Our choice to be successful and to align ourselves with other people who are going in the same direction is not like it's huge and profound. So we don't see it. It's not a single thing. Well, if I just hang around with this person, I'm instantly going to be successful. But in the companionship of other people who are pursuing success, they inspire us and we them. So most times, when the scriptures talk about things, we tend to think that they counsel us to avoid certain kinds of people. And we're going to look at that first. We're actually going to look at that. So turn over to 1 Corinthians, 15th chapter. And this is a church setting. And so the first thing we're going to be looking at is the power that individuals have, negative individuals, and how they can influence an entire community. So we're going to start by looking at 1 Corinthians 15th chapter. We're going to go to the 33rd verse. This verse is so commonly used. It's just part of our cultural lingo, actually. Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. Is there anybody here who hasn't heard that before? Here's the interesting thing. You read that, and if you don't take it into context, you don't even know what's really being said. So turn over to the beginning of chapter 15. Now I would remind you, brothers, of the gospel that I preached to you, which you received, in which you stand, and by which you are being saved, if you hold fast to the word that I preached to you. Well, unless, of course, you believed in vain. And then he goes on to remind them of this sequential gospel. For I delivered to you as of first importance what I also received, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures, that He was buried, that He was raised on the third day in accordance with the Scriptures, and that, and then he goes on to affirm this or prove this, and that He appeared to Cephas, then to the 12, then He appeared to more than 500 brothers at one time, most of whom are still alive. So these are the things that I've taught you. This is what I have instructed you since the beginning. This, incidentally, is the most clear sequential statement of the whole death and resurrection of Christ. Very clear statement. And yet there appears to be doubt. And this goes back to this, do not be deceived, bad company ruins good morals. So what it seems that Paul is saying is, there is a small group that has infected your number. They're causing doubt. Just a couple of people, the wrong people, can influence an entire community to think in a bad direction. That's the power of just a few people. So he says, this is the essence of the gospel. Christ was crucified for your sins, He was buried, He was resurrected, and here's the doubt. Here's the doubt that's infected them. Now, if Christ is proclaimed, and we're over at verse 12 now. Now, if Christ is proclaimed as raised from the dead, how can some of you say that there is no resurrection of the dead? But if there's no resurrection of the dead, then, well, not even Christ was raised. And then we go back to the beginning and remember what he says. I deliver to you as of first importance. And then that whole collection of things that I read. So what he's saying is that some of you are actually doubting that Christ was raised from the dead. So if you're doubting that Christ was raised from the dead, then what in essence are you doing? You've just undermined the entire gospel message that you claim to believe. Because if Christ isn't raised from the dead, he says, then nothing else that you believed really matters. And he goes on to say this in other terms. So now we're going to move over to verse 30. Why are we in danger every hour? I protest, brothers, by my pride in you, which I have in Christ our Lord, I die every day. What do I gain if, humanly speaking, I fought with beasts at Ephesus if the dead are not raised? In other words, here's what he's saying. Why in the world have I gone through all this hassle in life? Why do I allow myself to be abused, to be persecuted, to be treated badly? Why would I do any of that if this is not real? Why does he go to the trouble to sequentially present this? Here's the power of influence. A couple of people have infected this community and caused them to doubt, and they haven't even bothered to unpack the beliefs of the people that they're trusting. They trust the credibility of the people, and they just stake their belief there. And so look at what he says. Wake up from your drunken stupor, as is right, and do not go on sinning. And the sinning that he's talking about here is not some grievous act. It's simply doubt. And the drunkenness is just this naive stupidity that says, you're just buying into what these people tell you. You're not questioning it. You're not doubting it. You're not even logically thinking through it for yourself. You're just taking what they're saying and you're allowing it to influence your future. This is the power of relationship. So just think about that. This is the power that relationships have over your life and mine. That's why it's so important to choose the people that you're going to be with long term. They'll take you to places you can't imagine. Now, just suppose that there wasn't a Paul in the lives of these people. Just think about that. How quickly would a gospel message be contaminated and destroyed and undermined and ruined if it weren't for an important relationship like they had with Paul? All right, let's turn over to something a little bit less profound. Let's turn over to Proverbs 22. Verse 24. Again, we're not using any new scripture here this morning. I just want you to see, understood in the right context, how powerful some of these texts are. Verse 24, Proverbs 22, "Make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare." Okay, so it's not talking about if you find yourself next to. What it's saying is, do not intentionally choose to go and hang out with this kind of person. Do not make that a person that you build strong alliances with. Why? What happens? Look at the way he words it. You're going to learn his ways. And that's the clue in this text, that this is a long-term relationship. See, if I meet Pat at church once a week for 15 minutes, and we say hi, and how's the weather, and we talk about, what would we talk about? The weather. Something inconsequential. And then Pat wishes me a happy week, and I wish Pat a happy week, and we go our separate ways. That's not the kind of relationship we're talking about, because there's no influence there. But if day after day I choose to hang around with Pat, and Pat is a man who is given to violent temper. Do you want to act violent or something for a moment? There you go. So Pat is a man given to that, and what's it saying? Over a period of time, I'm going to start to mimic his behavior. All right, so think about this. Have you ever had a good friend who moved from here, this part of the country, where we speak normally, and they moved to Georgia for a few years, where they don't speak normally? And they come back, and what do they sound like when they come back? They sound like they need to be what? I mean, they need to be stripped of all that something that they picked up while they were there. You cannot be in the presence of people without picking up some of their qualities and attributes. Now, if we get that about language, why don't we get that about character? And incidentally, some of you probably already know this, and you think to yourself, why in the world is he telling me stuff that I already know? Because every one of us knows young people for whom this isn't totally, completely clear. And here's why it's not clear. How many years does it take you to see that effect, either in the life of somebody else or in your own life? How many years does it take before you find out that you have come under the influence of something? It can take 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 10 years, right? It can take a long time. If you've only lived for... Scott?
This, I mean, you're talking about men and friendships, associations, but it goes deeper than that. I mean, I'm thinking now, as my kids are adults, the influence I have on them and their behaviors, their choices, their beliefs, their character, and some good, some bad. There are some things I wish they would not do, but then I reflect in the mirror and say, well, this is because of me. Why am I in this situation? So this goes to legacies of generations. We talked about this, you know, several months ago, about creating a legacy. You want to be successful, you want to be like somebody else, you also have to remember those who are in your own family are going to be like you. Does that make sense?
It does. That's a good piece of counsel for anyone who's going to be a father. But when we approach it from the other end, we have to say, well, you didn't choose who your father was, and you didn't choose who your family of origin was, but you do have choice over who you voluntarily associate with as an adult. You know what I'm saying? You can't escape your family. Well, I mean, you can, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, you come under the influence of your family without choice. But as you move into adulthood, you start to select the friends that you have. All right, so we've looked at some negatives. And most people get the negatives. As a matter of fact, they get sick of hearing the negatives. Right? What parent hasn't told their kids, you should watch out, you shouldn't hang around with so-and-so? or don't hang around with so-and-so, or you'll get to, right? Sometimes some parents don't have the courage to say, you should stop hanging around with Johnny, you're a bad influence on him, right? Johnny's going to turn out like you, but no parent wants to do that. All right, so let's turn over to Proverbs 15. Verse 22, without counsel, plans fail, but with many advisors, they succeed. All right, here's a useful question. Do you have a sounding board for important decisions that you're going to make in your life? Do you have a group of peers whom you can trust to give you valid input on the decisions that you're making? And what are the qualifications that allow them to speak into your life? So many people say, yeah, I have other people that I share my decision-making process with and allow them to give me good insights. How have you chosen those people? So let me illustrate this. When a corporation decides that it needs to have decision makers, it goes out and it selects what we'll call a board of directors. Do you think they just randomly pick the first 10 people that sign up for the job? Or do you think there's a lot of careful consideration goes into who they choose to be their board of directors? Do you have a board of directors? And what are the qualifications that they must meet in order to sit on your board? Do you have a list of qualifications? Do you know what to look for? If you were to go out and hand select 3 or 4 people to be your good friends, do you know what you would be looking for to find in them? Keep in mind how we started out when we said right after, it was either Brian or Bob said something, and I said that typically it's suggested that we become the aggregate of the 5 people that we're closest to, that we become somewhere in the middle between the 5 closest friends that we have. If you don't pick those friends carefully, you're going to be in the middle of what? Pretty low average. So maybe you need to write yourself a little note to consider what are the qualifications that you'll be looking for in your friends from now on. We'll look at a couple of them shortly. All right, finally, another well-known text on friendship, Ecclesiastes 4th chapter. Go to the 7th verse. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. Does anybody have a New Living Translation? No? I think in the New Living it says something like that two working together produce more than two by themselves. In other words, the output of two people working together exceeds the output of two people working alone. It really brings it home. For if they fall, one will lift his fellow, but woe to him who is alone when he falls and has no one to lift him up. Okay, so before moving on, what are the benefits that Solomon ascribes to friendship? Okay, they can help each other up. Is that literal or metaphorical? And if it's metaphorical, what are some of the ways that we help each other up? Okay, yeah, it probably is both. Any examples? Is there anybody here who can point to a specific example where a good friend has helped to pull you out of a pit in life? For a moment. Okay, let's read on then. Again, if two lie together, they can keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. So there's benefits as far as protection. And we can look at that as far as physical protection. We can look at that as far as moral influence protection. There's benefits in terms of productivity. Do you have a wife? Is your wife someone who would meet the qualification of, at least in part, of two or better than one? Is the return of the two of you working together better than the return of two of you working separately? But now expand this into your choice of friends beyond your house. Actually, let's move over for a moment the second page, which would be the back of yours. The first text box there. To the man with no fixed destination, any companions will do, since he does not know if they will aid or hinder his objectives. How could he, since he has not? If you don't know yourself where you are going, then how will you decide if your friends are good for you or bad for you? So what's the first step before you pick your friends? Having a personal purpose and values. And out of that will come the goals. Defining your values, defining your purpose, defining the things that you're going to live for is going to help you in selecting friends that are going to support that. But if you don't have that, then what are you looking for in friends? Just somebody to have a good time with. And there's nothing wrong with having a good time. But I think people can have a good time for 30 or 40 years and never fulfill their purpose. But to the man with a fixed purpose and set objectives, only others who share his commitments will be welcome traveling companions. Those without clear direction may well decide to sit and rest at noon and will persuade him to do likewise. Do you have friends that influence you to just take it easy, to relax, to just stop pursuing whatever you're pursuing? Now, do you have other people who encourage you to press on when you're in a difficult time? Here's a good test. Have you ever gone through a difficult stretch in a marriage, if you've been married for a number of years? Are there people that have encouraged you, you know what, just give up on it? And are there other people who have said, you know what, it's worth the fight, just stay in there? And they've helped you through that? When do you pick those friends? Do you go out when you're in the middle of a marriage crisis and say, I think I need to find somebody who's going to encourage me? I mean, it's a little late then, isn't it? Because now you're battling two things. Now you're not only battling a difficult marriage, but now you're battling a difficult marriage and the fact that now you need to go find a friend and get comfortable with the friend so that you're comfortable enough to allow the friend to speak into your life. When's the time to make the good friendships that are going to support the values and the purpose that you live by? The sooner the better. And yet, this is a challenge for most men. So I say, if you choose to be successful in life, choosing to have some good friends to journey with you is one of the most important decisions that you will make toward your success. Let's take a look at some of the needs that friendships fill, which is why we hunger for them. And incidentally, this is why people choose bad friendships. Because when you have no friends and you have needs, it feels like even a bad friendship is better than no friendship. So suppose you have a need for identity, a need for belonging. Aren't those things that a friend will help with a lot of times? If you're not secure in yourself and you're looking to the outside sources to help make you secure, if you don't feel acceptance and you're looking for outside sources that will accept you, then what's your choice in friendship going to be? Anybody who will accept you. Anybody who will value you. Does that mean they're good for you? Remember what I said, it can take 5 or even 10 years to find out if the people that you've chosen to align yourself with are really good for you. But then you've made an awful lot of choices. So here's the next success principle. You need to be secure in yourself before you pick your friends. Because if you pick your friends out of desperation, you'll probably pick bad ones. And this is so true with kids. Text box on the front side there. People often do things which to an outsider appear foolish or short-sighted. The greater the distance between a behavior and a consequence, the less likely it is that the consequence will influence the behavior. I'm going to take a really simple example to make this clear, and then we'll move back into the friendship realm. Suppose you know you should save. Right? Suppose that you're making money and you know that you should save a small amount of that money for the future. When are the benefits of that saving going to be realized? Somewhere down the line. Right? Probably pretty far down the line. What are the consequences of saving? Yeah, you don't. Which means those are nice words. Feel the consequences. What are the consequences now? You do without certain things. I can't go out on Friday night. I can't buy this thing that I'd like to buy. There are short-term consequences to good behaviors. People rarely emphasize that. To do the right thing for tomorrow might feel like you're doing the wrong thing for today. And the further the gap is between the behavior and the benefit, the less likely it is that you're going to execute toward the future benefit. Because it's probably contradictory to the short-term benefit that you could get by not living toward that. Carry that through into your friendships. The friendships that are good for you long-term might not be as appealing to you short-term. I think it's an advertisement for Las Vegas. I could be wrong. I just saw it the other week. But it starts out with two young boys. And the phrase that falls throughout the advertisement is, "Are you coming along?" So the one kid is shown doing some ridiculous daredevil thing like young boys would do. And he calls out to his friend and says, "Well, are you coming or not?" And the kid sort of feels pressured and intimidated, and he doesn't want to be left out. And so you see him in this commercial, and it all happens in split-second timing. But he follows the kid, and then it goes into the next phase. And the next phase is they're teens. And I guess they're going out on the town. And it's evident that they're going out on the town, and they're a little bit too young to be going out on the town. And they're a little bit too young to be hanging out with the girls. But the one is a little bit more adventurous, and he draws the other one into it. And the idea is that there is the appeal to what's risky, what's daring, what's challenging. And then the final thing is it shows the instigator, and they're still friends years later. And it seems that years later, the instigator is still drawing the other one in. And the instigator is now on a bus, and they're surrounded by beautiful women, and I guess they're headed off to some fun night at the casino. And so the guy who's always on the outside looking in says, "Well, I don't want to miss out on that," and that's the clear implication. So to all of us, it's the appeal of, "Oh my word, there might be something I'd miss if I don't get on the bus and go there, so I need to go there." But the reality is that is a strong pull in a lot of young people's lives. There is a short-term loss a lot of times to get a long-term gain. All right, let's come back to what are some of the things that friendships fill. People want to belong and to be a part of something. People want to be in the company of others like themselves. People who share community. People want to be in the company of others who accept them. People seek love and encouragement in difficult or confusing times. This is one of those interesting things that I don't think parents fully appreciate when they challenge their kids about friendships. The scripture that we read presented a balanced view of relationship. It's not enough just to avoid bad relationships. Because to spend your whole life avoiding bad relationships leaves you with what? None. You have to be helped and encouraged to understand how to pursue good relationships, because to only avoid bad relationships leaves you alone and isolated. How do we pursue good relationships? So one of the first steps that we said is you need to know yourself. You need to know your purpose. You need to know your values, because you need to understand who you are before you can choose who you should be with and who will be good for you. Second thing is you need to understand where you're weak. Where are you most prone to fall? See, it says here, for if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. Where are you most likely to fall? Where do you have a character weakness? Where do you have a persistence weakness? If you're working on something together and it's a project, if you're building a team of people, do you understand who you are and do you understand who you need? Take all that into account. I guess I'll come back and I'll ask this question again. I asked this on week one, but I'm going to ask it again because I really want this to matter. Are you pursuing a worthy goal right now? And that should be true no matter how old you are. Are you still pursuing some worthy goal? Because if you're not, you're just biding time. And if you are pursuing a worthy goal, who are the people that you need with you on that journey without whom you probably will not be successful? You've been amazingly silent so far. Does anybody, let's put a pause in here. Does anybody have any comments, questions? Want to interact about anything? Scott, my word, even you've been quiet. And Brian, how is that possible? I really miss Jim Holt some weeks, I'll tell you what. Not too much, but...
Well, a good friend will tell us some things about us to speak the truth in love, and he'll tell us some things or shouldn't tell us things that we may not like to hear at times. That we may think, well, it's not loving. Well, it can be loving, but it's true. We need to hear the truth. And, you know, iron sharpens iron, that we need to be directed. We need to be questioned, you know, and... We need those kind of people that are like little care box enough to ask those difficult questions. And speaking to her, a lot of times, Kevin, at first, may not want to hear that, receive that, even go away, but those are the people that we really need to look up with and gravitate to.
And to speak to what John said, how long does it take before you would feel comfortable speaking into another man's life and calling him out on something? Would you do that the second or the third time you met him? Might take months. Maybe a year or more. And it would also take a year or more for the person to open up about what they were thinking about. So you need to place yourself in a relational community as early as possible and invest in it as much as possible, but you also need to make sure that you've chosen the right people. Now, the table of three there, that's usually a table of four, you're a little community. Even within this small community, you're a smaller community. And you've been meeting for how long? Best part of a year, maybe? Okay. Would you say that it's taken you the best part of the year to kind of get to know each other at a deeper level?
Yes. Each day you share life experiences, which kind of opens up your vulnerability areas, you know, to share solutions. You know, typically...
If you drag out the life as an onion metaphor, I'm going to smack you, okay? We're not peeling off any layers. Okay. All right, just go back to the onion metaphor, all right?
But it does take time. I mean, everybody has this, and I struggle getting it back. For years, I struggled at social events, parties, kids, what do they do? All sorts. chit chat that really doesn't have a lot of meaning. You know, it takes time to, and that's all because you're feeling each other out. It's a chess match, basically, at that stage. You don't know, you're just moving pawns around and keeping your big boys protected until you really understand where they're going, where you're going. And then if you have commonality, then you start to share the inner secrets of who you are. And that really does take a lot of patience, a lot of time, a lot of trust, which takes time. And once you have that trust, then you can share those things you're insecure about. And that's really where meaning and conversation and relationships come from. It takes a long time.
So let me put you on the spot a little bit. Do you know some big aspiration of just one of every man that you meet with? Have you gotten to the point where you know what direction each of you is going? Has that even been a topic of conversation? Where do you hope to be in 10 years?
We haven't gotten there. And it's taken time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just thankful that, you know, Jason talks to him. I mean, he probably, you know, he listened. But now he told me, he says, look, it's taken a long time before I opened up. He's a tight clamp. Well, once he's opened up, he's pretty good.
He's still on other missions, too.
Yes, he has.
So, now, I do know that there are some that are seeking. They're seeking to find their destination. And I think we all kind of are seeking to find our destination. And I think it takes some close relationships to help focus in on, is my destination really my destination, or is it just kind of like something that would be nice?
Okay.
They address the issue with those two. That was how it was.
We are
definitely not there yet. That's all been a year.
Oh, it's been a barrier.
The first step to solve somebody's hang up is get them to admit they have a hang up.
So incidentally, I guess that means since Josh back there is going to Texas, that will he no longer be welcome in our community should he come back and wear some peculiar jersey or something? What I want the rest of you to hear is that these guys have been together for a year and they still feel like they have a long way to go before they're really open to each other, understand each other, and can speak clearly into each other's lives. Where are you on that journey? Have you even begun? Because a lot of people talk friendship, but they never do anything about it. I mean, seriously, they'll talk about, oh yeah, I know the value of friendship, but they never really take the steps necessary to place themselves in a small community with a few people. We're going to talk about another advantage to friendship now. And you started to dance around it a little bit, but you never really bored down into it. Remember what we talked about, Jim? Jim came into a new community, the community was doing new things, and it has elevated Jim's awareness and taken him to do good work, we'll say, that he might never have done otherwise. The friendships that you cultivate with other people who are striving for success are probably going to spur you on to new awareness of things that are opportunities in your life that you would never take advantage of without being in their acquaintance. This is an incredible crossroads. This is not just a spiritual community. This is a community of people with individual calls on their lives who meet at this intersecting point of life. And it's exactly the same as any other intersecting point. Cities are usually the cultural intersections of a society, where people who are coming from different perspectives, different backgrounds, but trying new things, trying different things, it's the crossroads. It's why most of the books in this Bible, the letters in this Bible, are written to what? Cities. Churches are started in cities because those are cultural crossroads. This is a spiritual crossroads where people are meeting on Sunday and throughout the week. Each of them has a call of God in their life to do something. You know what? When we meet with each other and I hear about what God is calling you to do, and you hear about what God is calling me to do, there's a certain level of inspiration. How would I know that I could help with something if I don't know that that something is being done? But when you tell me God has called me to do so, for instance, Jim back there. Jim has conversations with other people and he says, God's called me to go on this trip, or I feel God has called me to go on this trip and do this good thing. And somebody else says, well, I can't go, but could I help? Is there some way I could help you? And in that process, now other people are enjoined to start to do good things that they would never have done before. You know, when somebody steps up and says, I would like to support a trip like that, or I'd like to support some other good work that this church is doing, they would never have been in this position to support that or to be called to step up and do some good work if they hadn't been in this community. Your choice to be part of certain fellowships and start part of certain friendships is going to create awarenesses in you that you would not have had were it not for the fact that you were in them. Brian.
One thing these guys that I grew up with go out and donate for years. It's the first year I went.
So this is just a once a year thing, or is it a...
This is they're connected.
Okay.
I've seen these guys three times in the last 10 or 15 years.
All right.
So I went this past month. I had 18 guys that they're mostly in the but they're my younger brother's friends. But we're all friends, like, in the growing up, same situation. They're all the same characters they were when we were 15 to 20. You know, and it's funny, except they're different. Like, one guy knew what to order off the menu. He was the biggest knucklehead. Like, I'm like, looking at him, like, and he could remember people's addresses and all this stuff. But he had all this character I don't know about, you know? And he probably always had it, but he was like a little kid to me. You know, I didn't have the same respect. I mean, you know, it's funny to see the difference. Like, this was a new opportunity to be different, to be respectful of these guys as grown men. But the thing is, like, when you're talking about the crossroads, the community, you know, I'm built up into a different person because of this group. You know, the spiritual coaching thing and all. This guy who was cursive, he's Tommy's closest friend now that, you know, who was out of that whole group growing up. You know, and he's...
We should stop right now and pray for this guy if Brian is his closest friend, don't you think?
He was trapped. He's, you know, comes in, he's cursing, he's hugging up on me, you're the greatest, all this goofy stuff. I asked Tommy Goss, who knows the right from menu, to trade seats so that the guy could at least sit down and be in the ass. I could take one for the team. You know? And like, as I'm driving home, I'm thinking, I would have had so much better time if he wasn't there because I couldn't talk with everybody. But I got to call him up and have breakfast with him. You know, like, I've been given the word of life that some of the drunk things he was saying are definitely, I need this. You know? And he knows I'm a born again Christian. We're all raised Catholic. You know, he's thinking, yeah, I don't hear this stuff. But, like, I love him enough to do that. You know, I don't even call him today. Yeah, you know, I gotta call him today. No, he needs the comfort of, like you were talking about, of, I think he could talk to me about the pains that he has in his life. I owe him an apology. Like, his wife died, and I didn't make it to the funeral or anything. Like, and I heard about it. I didn't reach out at all. You know, I had my head on my own hands. But why not? You know, like, I hindsight, and, you know, in the time, because I was so busy with this and that, and we lost connection, and not important. It wasn't, you know. See, on Monday, I realized that was important, that step. I didn't take that.
So let me take this and take what you've just said, and I want to flip this around and issue it as a challenge, because the reality is that most of us don't know how to make good friends. Or we find out too late in life how to make good friends and what constitutes a good friend. But if you get to the point that you understand how to make good friends and get to the point where you can appreciate the value of good friends, and you know that most men don't know how to make good friends, what would it be our responsibility to do? To reach out to the people around us and befriend them. Just like Brian was saying, it's like, so think about this. If you're in a circle of people and you're the only one who's a Christ follower there, and this is not, I don't want to beat evangelism to death. That's not what I'm saying. Can you just come along that side of that guy and be the one voice of sense and reason and encouragement and inspiration in that guy's life? How many inspirational voices do you have? I saw your hand, I'll be right with you. How many inspirational, really genuinely good inspirational voices are in your life? Do you have many? Go into your workplace. The people that you see regularly. I don't know, if you're in some club or you bowl together or I don't know. Whatever else you do. Do you have people who are speaking good and encouragement into your life? Mostly? Probably not. Let me go ahead.
So this is where this teaching kind of comes into a quandary. Right? I've heard it before. And my question is, you don't hang out with a bad company unless you trust the company. Yeah.
No, it's a reasonable question. It's a good question. I love the way you phrase it. How do you become an evangelist without becoming a knucklehead? That sounds like a book title. That really does, huh? Can we do that? I think we should do that. Do you remember how I said that you need to know who you are before you pick your friends? Once you know who you are and the direction that you are living in, then you can start to pick your friends. And also, at that point, you're going to be able to start to have influence on others without them influencing you. Until you know who you are and the direction that you are going in, you're just as prone to be influenced by them. Well, it wasn't that deep. You don't need it.
Well, you have your core of best friends that you allow to speak into your life, that you are so closely associated with and connect. And then you have those friends that you spend some time with and you hang out somewhere, but they're not speaking into your life. You're not closely associated. They're not your best friends.
Right.
Maybe not friends. Even Jesus, he was had the multitudes, the 500, the 70, the 12, and then there were three that he was constantly with.
Yes. Let me pull a couple of things together here. What you said, what Brian's talking about, and the conversation that we had about Scott and his small group here before. Because as you take time to develop a group, we'll say a small group of friends, over a period of time, you're going to start to discover their values. Until you discover their values and until the friendship deepens a little bit, you don't drop your guard. And people who don't drop their guard, here's how this works. They tend to try to be influencers of others, but don't allow anybody to influence them. It's sort of like an internal firewall. Well, I'll talk to you, but I won't tell you much about myself. I'll talk to you and try to influence you, but I won't allow you to influence me. The difference between what you're talking about and a close friendship is, in a close friendship, I know the values that you have, the character you have, and the direction you're going. And because that's true, I'm going to lower my guard and I'm going to trust what you say because I trust the character behind what you say. You're not going to trust the character behind what that person that you're trying to reach says. You haven't developed that. Right. This is the power of deep friendship. Because deep friendship is built on common values, common purposes, common beliefs. And at that point, now I know I am safe and I can lower my guard. It doesn't mean we're going to agree on everything. But because I trust who you are, I may allow your words to influence me and expand what I believe. I'm guessing nothing has changed since then, right? He's probably still not one of them.
And you're allowed to be honest like that sometimes.
Okay, so that's two sermon series that we need. I'll see you in heaven, but I don't want to see you here. That sounds like that could be a multi-part series, too. I think that could draw a good crowd, too. All right, let's talk about at least two. We're going to talk about two different kinds of relationships that you probably want, and one is peer-to-peer, and one is authority-to-peer. So all of this book, this is an important understanding, all of this book is essentially written from a perspective of authority. It's written from people, inspired by God, it's written from people who know to people who don't. Hence the authority. So every one of us needs people in our lives that know more than we do, even in friendships. So remember we said we're the average of the five closest people that we have? What does that imply? If we're in the middle, it means that there have to be people above. This is where men are extremely insecure. Everybody wants to be the top dog at the table. Because you look smarter, you have better answers, and everybody oohs and ahs and stays silent in your presence because you're just the top dog at the table. But you can never grow as long as you're always the top dog at the table. Bob said it well earlier on when he said, right at the beginning, he said that a guy could read that, you know, a top person in a field is right here in Quakertown. And he'd never reach out to him. Until you are willing to acknowledge that you need some authority in your life, you're only going to expose yourself to friends that are at your level or below your level. And that's not derogatory. I don't mean that they're below your level like that they're a subhuman species. But they're not where you are. You will always be the top guy. And where are you going? How are you going to grow? Here's a question. who do you need to make connection with in the next month? If you were going to be tomorrow or next year or the year after a more successful person than you are right now, who's the person that you need to reach out to and consider including in your circle of friends? If you don't know, how would you find out? Final thing that maybe we want to look at about choosing friends here. Most people choose friends based on things that they're doing, the shared interest thing that we said. Even, let's say we're going on a missions trip together and we'll choose friends because, oh, we're all going on the missions trip together. Do we all share the same objectives for going on the missions trip? We don't know that. I'm thinking here, and I'm going to put him on the spot. It's fun to be at the front of the room and put people on the spot. You shouldn't have looked up, dude. You're in the spotlight now. The sights are on you. So Josh is leaving a community of people, a group of connected people. He's leaving friends that he has, and he's going to a whole new setting. Take any one of us and place us in a new setting, and who are we likely going to find as friends? The people that are doing the same things that we are. I'm telling you, it would be better to pick somebody who has aspirations to go in a certain direction than to pick somebody who's doing a certain thing. Find another successful person to associate with. It doesn't matter what direction they're going in. Maybe they're in med school right now. Find somebody who is committed to becoming something in life, who is committed to fulfilling the call God has on their life, and journey with that person. Because that person can contribute something to your life. Just because two people share the same interest doesn't mean that they're both committed to growth. We find that surprising, but it's not at all. So wherever you go, and every new endeavor that you strive for, look for the character of growth in that person. That's what you're looking for. All right, we're going to wrap up with a couple of impediments to good friendships. Down at the bottom of, it will be your second side there. This is a male thing. Competitiveness, which leads to comparison and envy. So let's take Scott's small group as an example. And let's say that they continue to meet together for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, and they get to know each other well. And let's say that over the course of that period of time, they become very open with each other. And there's Bill, and he's looking at Scott, and he sees Scott becoming progressively more successful. And Bill, oh, and he gloats about it too, okay? And Scott gloats about his success. And Bill starts to feel left out. Not only feel left out, but he feels like he's starting to be a little bit jealous of Scott. And he doesn't come right out and say it, but he starts to harbor a little bit of resentment against Scott. Can you play act resentment? I don't know what that looks like. I know what chest thumping pride looks like, but I don't know what resentment looks like. Oh, there we go. Excellent. Well, what happens? Over a period of time, you guys will drift apart. Good friends celebrate each other's success. Now, if you go back and you read the story of David and Jonathan, it's an amazing story for this reason. In order for that friendship to run its course, Jonathan essentially had to celebrate that his friend would get the job that should have been his.
Yeah, we don't talk about him enough. John?
No, okay.
Yeah, he deserves a lot of credit.
That is a friend, friends. The friend who will celebrate your success even sometimes when it comes at your expense. Bill?
We also talk a little bit about...
Okay, we better use a different group as an example because I can see this group self-destructing before my eyes. All right, so tied right in with that personal ambition, which abuses friendship. So, over a period of time, and this is small and subtle too, we can tend to start to take advantage of people that we're close to that have certain skills and abilities just for our own advantage. One of the things that a small group of friends can do when they know they're all committed to the same core purposes and values is, I can lay down my life for your success. Who in your life is willing to lay down their life for your success? And for whom are you willing to lay down your life? Do you have anybody like that? They're willing to be second so that you can achieve whatever it is that you're striving for because they value what you're striving for. Here's another thing that we just need to be on guard about. Sometimes we use each other for our skills, our connections, our advantages, and we don't value each other as people. So in the process of your all meeting together, you want to care for and nurture each other as human beings. And for those of us who begin new groups, it's equal parts, we're both striving for something, but at the same time, we're still human, we still need refills, there's those moments of fear or doubt or uncertainty, and in these close friendships is where that gets nurtured and cared for. So that's pretty much all I got for today. And that's why I said this is as much about you going out and doing something with this. I can talk about this all day long. You just have to believe it's true. That good friendships are good for your success. That it's a difficult thing to cultivate good friendships. Most people resist it for that reason. Each of us just has to decide if we're going to be like the majority of men or if we're going to be different.